Welcome to another episode of Thinking Like a Bank, where we show you how to think like a bank by applying the same strategies and principles that banks use to help you find more financial freedom in your life. I'm your host, Sarah Ibrahim. With us today, I have Victor Pierantoni. He's a coach, lifelong martial artist, and philosophy enthusiast. His path as a coach was inspired from losing his mother when he was 7 years old to cancer. This devastating experience taught him to cherish those he loves while training himself mentally and emotionally to be ready for the inevitable battles that life would throw his way. Victor specializes in helping creative business owners and high-performance achievers accomplish a lifetime of therapy in a day so they can shed the weight of unresourceful emotional conflicts quickly and effortlessly. He guides them to cultivate unshakable inner peace so they can transform life as they know it and operate at their highest level of contribution. He began his coaching career working full-time as the results coach for one of the largest coaching organizations on the planet, Robbins Research International, or as most people know the brand, Tony Robbins. There he conducted 4,000 private coaching sessions and worked with over 400 clients. He was entrusted with a client roster averaging 95 plus clients at a time. Through his time there, he became known unofficially as the turnaround expert among his colleagues and was ranked the number one coach in 2017 based on client feedback among 120 coaches around the world. After 3 years at Tony Robbins, Victor went off on his own under his own brand, Zen Stoic, a modern hybrid philosophy of timeless wisdom inspired from thousands of years of Zen Buddhism and Stoic philosophies that leverage modern techniques to help people live a liberated life today. He has worked with all sorts of interesting individuals, including CEOs, celebrity magicians, Navy SEALs, actors, NASA engineers, SpaceX engineers, and has also conducted speaking engagements at private corporate trainings nationwide. Victor, welcome to our podcast.
Thanks so much for having me, Sari. It's awesome to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you on this podcast. I was recently on your podcast and that was a lot of fun. Thank you for having me on there.
Of course, man. It was a great conversation.
Yeah, thanks. And, you know, as the show goes, the theme of it, right, thinking like a bank, where, you know, not only thinking like a bank, but also the thinking part is really important. And I know this is what you do for a living. Mm-hmm. You help transform the way people think about their environment, the way they think about themselves, their business, their money, and so on. So I think you're a perfect fit for this podcast. Before we jump into that, tell us more about who you are and what you do.
As a just going with who I am, I would say is I'm a person that's always seeking answers, right? I would call myself somewhat of a seeker of wisdom and always looking for new ways of thinking, new perspectives. I'm never really necessarily by myself on my path, right? I'll always kind of look for a coach or a mentor or a teacher of some kind to help me really shed limiting beliefs that are not me. And I love this path in life because to me, I love to live with this metaphor of like as the warrior in the garden. And that comes from like a little story where a samurai master's teaching his student and they're in the garden and he says, you need to live a peaceful life. And he's like, you just taught me how to chop somebody's head off yesterday. What do you mean a peaceful life? And he says, he's like, shouldn't I just be here in the garden? And the guy says, well, it's better to be a warrior in a garden than a gardener in a war. And the reason why I've dedicated my life in this way is because there are going to be inevitable battles and storms. And so I like to arm myself with the best behavioral techniques, philosophies that help me, you know, kind of shed dead weight, emotionally speaking, mm-hmm. or mentally speaking, mm-hmm. Sometimes even physically. And that's really what I've dedicated my life to. So the way that it's kind of come up is I'm a martial artist. I've been mm-hmm. doing martial arts since I was 6 years old. Mm-hmm. I've been coaching for the last, I'd say like 7 or 8 years. Mm-hmm. And it's been just a beautiful passion of mine that is incredibly rewarding in terms of what I'm able to do for people. And it's just a very fulfilling type of work for me. So I'd say me in a nutshell. But yeah, my main thing now is I really like working with impact focused business owners and entrepreneurs to help them transform not just their mental and emotional well-being, but also their income and their ability to acquire income and to keep income. And what I think is really interesting about your podcast, Sari, is that you're teaching people how to think like a bank. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure there's a lot of external strategies, but the thinking part really starts internally. And mm-hmm. that's my zone where I usually work with people. So thank you so much for having me on the show. I'm okay. very excited to talk about this.
Oh, me too. Yeah. And you mentioned a key word internally. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this might be kind of a rhetorical or redundant question, but how important is it to control or understand your inner self versus your exterior?
I mean, this is going to be more of like a 30,000 foot view or generalized statement, yeah. but it is really and truly everything. Everything that you experience on the outside and the types of actions that you take are dictated by the state of being that you operate in. So your state of being, you could say, is like your mood or your emotional state moment to moment. And the quality of our actions in life and decisions are based upon the quality of our emotional state. And if we are taking high quality actions, then the results that we're going to get will be either wins for us or mm-hmm. they're going to be great feedback, right? We'll be in a state where even if something doesn't work, we'll be able to learn from it rather than start to identify with the failure, you could say, or the feedback of the environment. So our state of being, the internal side of this equation, is pretty much everything in terms of the quality of your decisions, your actions, your words, what you express the world, and ultimately how you even interpret the results that you get.
So if I hear this right, what is going on in your brain is what you're seeing in the outside world.
Yeah. Okay. And I can get into this topic. You know, you and I have talked about this a couple of times.
Yeah.
But there's this idea in the work that I do called perception is projection.
Yeah.
And it's one of the guiding principles of this work. And perception is projection. The way I can explain it is like this. The human brain is basically made to take in 126 bits of information per second. Now, in the modern age, we are hit with about 11 million bits of information per second. So it is overloaded would be an understatement, right? Because the way that you can picture this is like, if I handed you 126 toothpicks, that's fathomable in your mind. Mm-hmm. But if I handed you 11 million, like you don't even know what that would look like.
Yeah.
And if every second that you're getting that, then you really don't know what it looks like. So what we do is we use a filtering system basically, you know, through our nervous system of deleting, distorting, and generalizing that information. So we're only able to consciously pay attention to, it's a 7 ± 2. So like a phone number, like when somebody tells you the reason why we can remember it is it falls right into that number. So we're only able to consciously pay attention to that while we're absorbing, you know, 126 bits. So we delete that information. And the question then becomes, okay, well, of the 11 million bits coming in, how do I know what to actually pay attention to? How do I know, how does my body or my unconscious mind know what to actually gather from that if it's going to be overwhelmed? And what that comes down to is you know what to filter based on your emotions, your experiences in life, your relationship dynamics that you have, your beliefs, your values. That is your filtering system. So you cannot necessarily control the external world, but you can control what you emotionally engage in, because that filtering system is built by what we emotionally engage in our lives. And it activates something called the reticular activating system, or the RAS. It determines what's important in your life. So we only know to focus on what's important based on what we engage in emotionally. Right? The things that trigger us are the thing that actually pull our attention in. So the way that this kind of manifests itself into your day-to-day life is that when it comes to money, when it comes to income, when it comes to wealth, and you know, thinking about that area of our lives, that, you know, our financial well-being, we are seeing our financial world through all of our thoughts, beliefs, values, emotions that we have. So what that could mean is that you might have, you know, $1 million idea in front of you, for instance. But if you, for instance, hold the belief that I'm not good enough, or I'm not the type of person who can make that much money, right? I'm a $30,000 a year person. If you have these beliefs, and a lot of the time we don't even know that we have them until they're brought up, or until we say them, right? They're operating there in the background. But if you have those beliefs, then you're not going to even notice your own $1 million idea or $1 million opportunity. All you're going to notice is all the reasons why that's not for you because of the belief that you have. So it's almost like it blinds us to the world to only see what we've decided consciously or unconsciously is important to us. And now many people here might be listening to this and be like, but I think about getting rich all the time. Like, sure, but maybe you also are emotionally attached to the lack of financial mm-hmm. well-being. And that alone is, I would guess, for most people, as human beings, we're more driven towards problems. That component of it there probably has much more emotional charge than the positive component, which is why a person might continue to see these undesirable or unsavory situations in their lives regarding money.
So if I hear this right, if you want to change, if you want to exponentially increase your income and your net worth, mm-hmm. financially net worth, you have to, you might have some sort of perception that you don't deserve 30,000 or 100,000, you or a million, you deserve 30,000, 40,000 a year. That's what you're used to. That's what you're comfortable with. So in other words, it's almost impossible to get to the millions because you don't even see that happening in your life. Thus, mm-hmm. if you want millions of dollars, you have to see that already. You have to believe that, and you have to change kind of the RAS as you change, as mm-hmm. you said, you have to adjust that in order to attract that money and to attract those opportunities, because you're blind with those opportunities if you're not even thinking about them in your own head.
That's right. Yeah. It's interesting that we're recording this podcast today, because earlier today I was listening to an episode with one of my coaches, the wealth coach that I had hired for myself. And she's amazing. Her and her soon to be husband have a program called Richer Every Day. And they basically teach people how to become richer every day, right? It's right there in the name. But I hired her. Her name is Michelle Alderman, soon to be Michelle Dillard. And, you know, it was interesting because I went in there thinking that we were going to talk about money. And what was hilarious is, like, we barely talked about money. What we talked about, what we had to start with, were like what emotions of mine weren't processed and what beliefs that I hold about myself that actually prevented me from having money in my life. So it's fascinating, because when I started talking to her about that, what really kind of blew my mind about it is that I had a belief, like, she just asked me, like, right off the bat, she's like, answer these, you know, fill in the blank. She's like, money is. And the first thing that came to my mind was bad. And historically, like, I always had this habit where I'd be able to make money, but then I'd get rid of it very quickly. I'd spend it or I'd invest in something, you know, and have a poor decision around it. And I didn't understand why. And what it came to me is that in my life, people, right, like family, other, you know, business partners and such, have in my past, especially in my younger years, have used money as a means of control against me. So I thought, well, it's bad because they controlled me. And then I felt all these bad things. And so I made that association in my mind, I didn't even know it. So the way that my mind was kind of working was like, I don't want to be in possession of this thing that I said is bad. And so I would get rid of it. And what was interesting is, like, the moment I made that switch, everything changed financially. Like, I wasn't just spending it or like trying to get rid of my money as quick as possible, because I had uncovered what was under the surface unconsciously. And what's fascinating is she talks about this idea on the podcast episode that we did, this concept of rich broke people and broke rich people. And I find it fascinating, because what was interesting is when, you know, she originally met her soon to be husband, you know, he was making like $12 million a year, but she wasn't making anything near that. And she didn't think she was capable of that. But here's the funny thing is that even though he was making that much money, he was still living paycheck to paycheck. He had to make that every single month in order to sustain the lifestyle that he had created. So he was a broke rich person kind of thing. Whereas she was actually the opposite. She didn't think that she was, you know, doing that well. And yet she had a rental property that literally covered all of her expenses. And so she was a broke rich person. So he was a rich broke person. So what was fascinating is she realized that she, between the two of them in the beginning, you know, of their relationship, she was actually the richer of the two. And it's a fascinating idea, because she only believed that because of the unconscious beliefs that she held at the time coming in. So a lot of us do this where we, you know, we might have these great opportunities. We might even have like an incredible amount of assets, but maybe we don't allow ourselves to see it because of what we believe about ourselves or the world. Or we do have all these assets, and yet we have beliefs that make us keep getting rid of them consistently, yeah. No matter how much we make. So I find it fascinating because all of that is within our control to change. That's where it all exists.
And how could one, like, what is, like, I guess, like, one of the cures or one of the things to help, like, if you are this person who has some, I mean, I guess there's probably like a billion types of negative views one could have about him or mm-hmm. herself or about money. Let's just say like you had one of them, you knew what it was. Like, what are some ways of mitigating that or eliminating that even, or in your situation, even eliminating it, as you say?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So I have this exercise that I'll take clients through, and there's a more extensive process of doing this, but you know, for the listeners, this is a pretty simple way of doing it. The first thing that you could do mm-hmm. is pay attention to your own thoughts, like your language that you use, because our language, right? The words that we use, basically you can think of it like this, is like every problem that we have or think that we have exists yeah. in our neurology. So our nervous system is literally coded by our language. It acts in the way that we suggest using our words. So if we find ourselves saying things like, oh, I can't make that much money, or I don't deserve that, or I'll never be one of those, the idea is to first and foremost, like, catch it in your mind, to have the awareness to catch it. And it's not, I'm not going to sit here and say that that is, you know, super easy to do. Yeah. It takes practice. It takes, you know, sometimes that's one of the reasons why meditation or journaling is really productive. It's a very simple activity that you can do, but it'll show you what's going on in your head a lot of the time. So the first thing to do is, like, let's say you catch a thought that says like, I'm not good enough, or yeah. I don't deserve to make that much money. So the first thing that you would do is catch that. And then you might ask yourself, when did I decide that? Because that it's not that that belief has been there all your life. There was a moment in time where it was decided. You might not consciously remember the moment, but you can always ask yourself, when did I decide that? And very likely you're going to have something, an answer come up right away in your mind. Most people won't pay attention to that answer, and they'll try and think their way into the answer, which never works. But if you just pay attention to the first thing that comes up, maybe you're like, well, I decided that when I was 5. Okay, cool. Is that, so I would tell somebody, like, is that the thought that you want? They're like, obviously not. So pretty much what I do is, like, this is a very simple exercise that I give my clients all the time, is like, you'll take a sheet of paper and we'll call it the focus journal. Mm-hmm. So you divide the paper in half. And on one side, you would write current thought. So like, this is what I'm currently thinking. So maybe I'm thinking, I don't deserve to make X amount of money, right? That's the thought that went off in my head. Or money's hard to make, right? Maybe it's like that. Or money doesn't grow on trees. Like, people love saying that shit. Right, whatever your yeah. flavor of disempowering money beliefs is, write that down on one side of the paper and under the side that says current thought. The next thing that you would do is, on the other side, you would write, what do I actually want? And so the idea is to train your mind to focus on what you want. So maybe the thought that you want is, I am capable of making X amount of money. And then what you would do, the final step, is to physically cross out that first belief or the first thought under the current thought, and then have that thought there instead. So what you're doing is you're showing your mind, think this thought, go this way.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's a practice, right? This is a very, like, very practical exercise. Now, there are other moving pieces, but just doing this alone could actually be extremely helpful for somebody. Just catching your thoughts, getting them out down onto paper, and not leaving them in your mind. Because when yeah. we leave things in our mind, you can think of it like anything you leave in your head for more than 24 hours is going to be completely distorted. Like, it's going to go all over the place. So better to write things down and then focus on what you want.
Okay, so two things that resonated really well that I love that you said. Mm-hmm. Want. So like, when you shift from you have this thought in your head, okay, then now what do you want? What do you mm-hmm. want out of this, or what do you want to happen? Mm-hmm. I think it's really important, because I think a lot of people are too shy or timid to use the word want. They replace mm-hmm. it with need, or I have to, or like they try to justify it because they have to do something. But when it's very rare you hear somebody say, I want to reach for this position that's going to make me $10 million a year, or I'm going to reach mm-hmm. for this mm-hmm. investment opportunity, or I want to, because they think that it's too presumptuous, right? Mm-hmm. And like too much for them, kind of like mm-hmm. it's outside of ordinary living.
Yes.
But you know, when we command ourselves to want something, it changes our thinking process. It eliminates it converts the negative thought into a positive thought. and then it helps us. It actually gets to whatever it is that you want. So I've actually been practicing it myself, like replacing need with want. Mm-hmm. Like I want to eat. I want to, you know, sleep right. I want to, not because I need to, but more so I want. And this is probably a really deeper philosophical thing, but it could be argued that every need is backed by a want. And think about that for a second, right? Like, I think that the word need doesn't even exist. It's always a want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So like you eat, you know, you don't need to eat. You eat because you want to eat. Well, then somebody says, well, if I don't eat, then I won't live. Well, you're because you want to live. That's why.
Yeah, that's a great point, actually. That's beautiful.
And then the other part of it too was leaving things in your mind. So this is something I've been practicing too. Like I write down ideas and then I even write down the next steps of those ideas. I put them in my calendar. So this way, I don't want anything to really sit in my brain. Ideas are created. And then as my mentor says, he always says like a brain is a really good place to create and generate ideas, but a horrible place to store them.
Yeah, exactly. It's it's got a high premium for storage. Which is like all your inaction and sabotage. that's actually a really good point. And it comes down to this whole idea of focus, right? Focusing on what you want. And, you know, some language that I also like to use in addition to, you know, what do I want is what do I choose for myself? Mm-hmm. Right? A lot of these are decisions, right? So if somebody writes something like that down, or they have this thought, like I want to make $10 million, like your example, the moment that they start saying something like that's out of the realm of like what I think, or like some variation of that, that in there is going to show what the actual thought is. So like, that's the disempowering thought. Like this is out of my, you know, scope or out of the realm of possibility for me. Like that is one of the thoughts that you might put in the focus journal, right? And then shift over to focusing on what you want. So that's a really good point, because if you think about it, right, if we're going to think like a bank is not sitting there going like, I don't really deserve to make $1 million. Like, I don't know if I'm good enough to generate this amount. Like a bank is not saying any of that. So if we want to think like a bank, right, it could be very just matter of fact towards what you actually desire. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, and one of the ways that a bank thinks, and I'd paraphrase this, like if I could personify the bank and like, as if they had thoughts, or as if this thing had thoughts. Let's say the bank was a person. And if this bank had a thought, they wouldn't say any of that, any of the stuff like self-sabotaging or self-defeating beliefs that we have. Mm-hmm. What a bank might say is like, we buy income.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like we're taking on money and we're buying income. We're buying higher leveraging vehicles that will bring in income. They're not buying liabilities, right? We buy assets. And we invest in people via loans and whatever that have a high probability of bringing money back. Right. Yeah. So a bank is not going to be like people were mean to me when I was a kid, so now I don't deserve this amount of money.
You're right. Yeah. If a group of bankers got together and they said, we're going to take this $100 million and then we're going to turn it into, you know, $300 or $400 million in the next 10 years, they're not going to think that's crazy. They're going to think that's a very doable thing to do.
Correct. Yeah. And they're going to focus specifically on what they want.
Yeah.
And so this is, I would say, like, if somebody is going to think like a bank, what they need to do is to really examine what do they believe about themselves? What do they believe about the world and what's possible, like with them in that world?
Yeah.
Because those are ultimately the things, like one thing that I was, you know, re-listening to on this podcast that I did with my coach is The amount in your bank account is neutral. It has no meaning until you decide to give it a meaning, until you decide to give it a story. And the story is charged with emotion. Now, here's an interesting thing about when we tell stories. When we tell stories, whether we tell stories to ourselves or we tell stories to others, we release oxytocin, which is like the love hormone, the bonding hormone. And so we start to actually get attached to our stories. And in doing so, we're strengthening the boundaries in which those stories and beliefs and that, you know, emotional coding exists in our nervous system. And so we'll tell it more and more and we'll become even more and more attached. So the idea is you want to catch where you're telling yourself a story. You want to catch where you have a judgment, and instead practice taking a step back. Like if you look at your bank account, you don't like the number in there, take a step back, zoom out in terms of your perspective, and just state the facts to yourself without the story, without the opinions. Like, this bank account is X number of money.
Yeah.
my aim is to get it to this amount of money and start there without the emotion. Emotions are extremely important. They dictate pretty much everything in our lives. But when you're thinking about your situation, where you want to go with it, the idea is to take a step back and have an objective view for a moment so that you can actually do something about it.
Objective view. Okay, got it. Yeah, that's probably very difficult to do when you have emotions in place. I mean, emotions create the opposite effect of an objective view, right? It's correct. What objective is not.
Yes, it makes it very subjective, right? It makes it very personal to you.
Yeah.
And that's why, like, I think I've told you, you mentioned in my bio in the beginning that I do a lifetime of therapy in a day for these entrepreneurs and whatnot.
Yeah.
And the reason why it is possible to do that, and that's not an exaggeration of any kind, is because we carry with us what I like to call emotional debt. Mm-hmm. And I think this lingo works well with a financial oriented podcast. So we carry around emotional debt, and our emotional debt, I would say, is the most expensive debt that we have. It's the highest interest debt. The reason being is because all the poor decisions that one has financially, as well as in all areas of life, relationships, health, lifestyle, friendships, all that, are all based upon the emotional debt. Like when somebody makes a poor decision, the amount of emotional debt that they carry, it will influence that decision more than anything else. And so you can think of emotional debt as like, what are all the emotions that you've carried with you your entire life and that you have not yet processed? Because when I go into these sessions with my clients, we're looking at beliefs that they have about themselves or emotions that they've held on to, like major negative emotions. And a lot of them are carrying beliefs or emotions that they began when they were like 3 or 4 years old. And then they're running this enterprise with employees and making these, multi-million dollar decisions off of an operating system that began when they were three. Like, it's not no wonder that they're sabotaging themselves. Like, you wouldn't, put a three-year-old in your C-suite. So yeah. The idea is we want to be able to free ourselves of the emotional debt. And that's essentially like the whole thing of what I do is I help people first and foremost free themselves of that emotional debt. Because when you don't feel and process the emotions that come up, they come back with interest. And where this starts to play out in our financial life is when we are feeling a high degree of emotional pain, right? Because it hasn't been processed. In other words, like when I say it hasn't been processed, I mean, let's say you've been carrying around anger for like 25 years, and then something happens that would warrant about a 2 out of 10 in response, and you respond with 8 to 9.
Yeah.
That is because there's a great amount of emotional debt that has been compounding over the last couple decades. Mm-hmm. And in doing so, it puts the nervous system in so much pain that we want to just make decisions to get ourselves out of that pain, right? The outcome or the goal becomes get out of this emotional pain as soon as I can. So where this plays out in our finances for that matter is we start to make decisions without actually thinking them through, because we make decisions based on the premise of, is this going to get me out of pain? Or is this going to make me a little more comfortable? Not, is this going to bring me to where I want to go? Mm-hmm. And that's where the unprocessed emotions become such a problem.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually a bit scary, right? Because, when we're reading the news and things like that, and we see people doing really bizarre things. Mm-hmm. They could be just very well normal people who just, like you said, they had 25, 30 years of anger. And then somebody cuts them off. And then by cutting them off, it triggers all, this tons of emotional debt, and it brings back all this interest. And that's the dividend payout.
That's right. Exactly.
That's when the stock sells or whatever. Uh-huh. And it all comes out.
And that's a great way of thinking about it, right? Like there are situations in life, for instance, that warrant negative emotions, that warrant anger or sadness or fear. But when they don't, or when they warrant a much smaller amount and you have a disproportionate response, something's going on. That's why, many people in today's society seem to be like afraid of their own triggers, mm-hmm. or like they're overprotective of their emotional triggers. And I wouldn't necessarily recommend that, because that's not going to allow you to be free from them. Your triggers have a lot to tell you, right? And by paying attention to when they do come up, you can actually really release a lot of that emotional debt just by being able to notice, become objective for a moment about the emotional trigger and let it go.
Yeah.
So they're a huge gift. Like if you get emotionally triggered by like opening your bank statement, right, there's probably a lot there to process. And that is a great opportunity for you to do so. Right. Mm-hmm. There are some people, I think you said, you mentioned this on my podcast, like this idea of like being afraid to look at your bank account.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I've felt that before. I know you have before.
Yeah.
And we could call that like an emotional trigger. If you're afraid to look at your bank account, what's a great exercise to be like is like, okay, what do I believe that, what must I have to believe that when I open my bank account, I feel that feeling and I don't want to touch it? Because that will reveal a lot of money beliefs that would come up. Or what is it that I believe that whenever I want to go invest in something, I just stop and like go buy something instead.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is such an important thing, right? Such an important concept to talk about, an important subject, not just a concept, but a subject to talk about. And one of the things like I noticed, you know, that you do is something called NLP, neuro-linguistic programming. It's something that sounds very intriguing. Do you mind sharing more about that and like what it is?
Yeah. I'd be happy to share about that. So NLP is, like you said, it's called neuro-linguistic programming, and it's a fancy name, but just to like break it down and make it very simple, NLP is essentially the study of excellent behavior, and it's based on a process called modeling. So it models successful behavior. Now, over the years, it's basically different practitioners of it, psychologists have modeled what is successful. So like, for example, we have techniques for being able to get rid of phobias or, you know, being able to free somebody from a lifetime of anger, you know, in a few minutes. And these are modeled off of different times that this has been successful and that they've studied and modeled these things. So you could think of NLP as like the study of excellent behavior that gives you the user manual to your brain.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's how we can put it. Right. And you know, some people might be hearing this and being like, I've heard of NLP and it's used for manipulation and it's dark. And it's like, yes, for sure it is. And that is because of the person using it. It is all the intent of the person that's using it. So NLP has been taught, you know, all around the world. And like anything else, it is a tool. This is actually synonymous with like how some people might say money is bad. Like I used to say that, or money is the root of all evil. Like money is not evil. It's just a tool. It's a means of exchange. Just like NLP, you know, some people have heard of it before and may think like, oh, it's something bad. But at the end of the day, it's just a tool. It's a form of psychology, you could say, that again, aims at successful behavior rather than, you know, what's wrong with you. It's like, what do we want? Like, what's the outcome? Where do I want to go? So I use NLP heavily in my work. And when I, you know, talk about my philosophy, Zen Stoic. Zen Stoic is a braiding of Zen Buddhism, Stoicism, and NLP all in one.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons why I blend them together is because the Zen and the Stoicism really help with a sense of intentionality that you have for whatever it is that you're doing. And then the NLP gives you the tools and the resources, the techniques, so to speak, to be able to create results in a more effective and efficient way.
Got it. Okay. Can you give us an example? Like, I mean, is it like, what are some things that are involved in NLP? Like, yeah, I know what it is. I know what, but like, for example, like you're going to show it to me now, or can you provide an example on that?
Yeah. So, I mean, anybody can do this that's listening. So one of the techniques in NLP that is really simple is something called anchoring.
Mm-hmm.
And so anchoring you would use to essentially be able to elicit a desired emotional state. So if let's say you ask somebody, like you have a client that comes to you, Sari, and and you're like, how do you want to feel whenever you're dealing with your money? And so maybe they say something like confident, or maybe they say something like focused, or maybe they say something like, I want to feel grateful. Any one of those is fine, right? Like whatever positive emotional state that they want to feel.
Mm-hmm.
The way that anchoring might work is what you would do. And anybody listening to this, you know, as long as you're not driving, you can try this. If you're driving, do it later. But I would say what you can do is you can always close your eyes, and then you can think of a time where whatever emotion that you want to feel, let's say confidence in this instance, because, you know, people want to feel confident about their money. So let's say you want to experience confidence. What you would do, just as a very simple technique, is you could close your eyes and then imagine a time where you felt totally, totally confident. Like any memory of your life where you felt that, could be something little or big, but where you felt that confidence at like a high level. And then step back into that time so that you're seeing through your own eyes, seeing what you saw and hearing what you heard and feeling the feelings of confidence like rise up within you. And even like engage your body into this, right? Like put yourself in the posture that you do when you're feeling confident. Breathe the way that you do when you feel confident, right? Stand in that same way. And then allow those feelings of confidence come in. And then as soon as that confidence reaches a peak, just squeeze your right fist and hold it. And then as soon as the confidence starts to drop off, as soon as the feeling starts to drop off, let it go. And you would do that over and over and over again with different emotions, things that you wanted to stack into the physiological movement mm-hmm. of squeezing your right fist. So that's an example of creating an anchor. So the reason why you might want to create an anchor is so that you have a quick way of accessing the most appropriate emotional state for the situation that you're going into. So if you need to perform at a high level, it is very useful to have an anchor that you can just immediately click into. Like if, let's say, somebody is in sales, right? Mm-hmm. And that's how they make their money. You don't want to go into a sale hoping that you're going to be in the right state of mind.
Yeah.
You want to, you know, get focused, get fully associated to like what it is that you're about to do and then show up in that state. So you can repeat that exercise that I just said over and over and over again for different emotions, or you can do it like 10 times with 10 different memories of confidence and then really lock in the sensation of squeezing your right fist, for example, into confidence. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be squeezing of your right fist. It can literally be any like physiological movement that is unique. Mm-hmm. So for instance, when I anchor, like I have the anchor actually placed on my middle finger. So like when I push on my middle finger like this, mm-hmm. I have like hundreds of emotional states that get access like that because I've stacked it over, you know, months mm-hmm. of doing that.
That makes sense. It's almost like you're programming your mind. Like, all right, let's go to, I need to be confident right now. So the most confident stage or part of my life was at this time, this place. Mm-hmm. And then you have a physiological trigger that brings you there. So this mm-hmm. way, you're controlling your emotions. You're working from the inside out, not from the outside in, which most people do. Most people go out in the world and the world judges their mood, mm-hmm. how they react. Yes. This is, I'm going from the inside out. I'm controlling. I'm saying, all right, you know what? I'm starting to see myself in this. I have this sale or this investment I'm working on. I'm starting to see some negative thoughts. Mm-hmm. I'm going to switch right now to the most confident place I've been to in my life.
That's right. 100%. Yeah. And that's the idea of it, right? And I think there's an important distinction to make here is that mm-hmm. people will sometimes use the phrase control your emotions.
Yeah.
I don't believe that we actually control our emotions. I feel like our emotions are more of a response.
Yes.
Like almost like automatic response. So you can respond to your emotions. So we don't necessarily control our emotions, but what we do control is our state of being. Yes. So that's like the example of like anchoring. Like, let's say like I'm feeling a little bit anxious. So what am I going to do? I'm going to focus on what I want. I'm going to hit that anchor for confidence, and I'm going to step into that again. And then I'm going to show up with confidence, right? Mm-hmm. I'm going to decide to go there. And that's like a simple technique of NLP. But even like what I was talking about earlier, that whole idea of perception is projection. That's also a philosophy that comes from NLP.
Wow, Victor, thank you so much for sharing all of these awesome methods and tools that we can apply to control our emotions, I don't want to say control our emotions, control our state, right? And really work from the inside out, especially when it comes to making money, growing your wealth. It's heavily tied to the way you think about yourself and the way you feel about yourself. How can listeners connect with you and learn more about you?
So one of the best ways to connect with me is via Instagram, victor.pierantoni. So just, it's my personal and business Instagram, but that's where I usually put most of my content. I have mm-hmm. a podcast called The Zen Stoic Path, which you were a guest on mm-hmm. as well. So, you know, people can go and listen to that. But yeah, mainly I'm on Instagram. I also have a TikTok, victor.liberatedlife. Mm-hmm. And those are some of the best places you can do so.
Awesome. I'll add, and you have a website too, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Zenstoic.com.
Okay, I'll add in all the links to everything you mentioned mm-hmm. in the show notes below so that way listeners can connect with you. And I'm looking Beautiful. Forward to having you back on the show.
Likewise, man.
Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you, Sari.
To learn more about what we do and how we can help you grow more wealth, please visit www.finassetprotection.com. That's F-I-N, assetprotection.com. The topics presented in this podcast are for general information only and not for the purposes of providing legal, accounting, or investment advice. On such matters, please consult a professional who knows your specific situation.